from the somewhat stinky studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. It is time for another warm hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks, You Bet Your Garden. A few weeks ago, we told you what to fill your raised beds with, but we didn't go into details about one intriguing ingredient. I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, we'll actually keep a promise and discuss the many moods of mushroom soil, plus your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and dramatically derisive demarcations. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens, because it's all coming up right after the news.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the watchful studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another investigative hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks, You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and in this week's In the News, we present a recent Philadelphia Inquirer article by Kristen Graham about an environmental wrong that still has time to be made right. Their headline, there's no place in Philadelphia like Lankenau High School. It's the city's environmental sciences magnet school, set amid 400 acres of woods, and it's the state's only three-year agriculture, food, and natural resources career and technical education program. Despite that, Lankenau just landed on the Philadelphia School District's closing list, one of 20 proposed to shutter as the district grapples with billions of dollars in unmet capital needs. Community members say the school must be saved because it's one of a kind, offering immersive education in agriculture and sciences, and boasting an almost impossible 100% graduation rate that, least to say, is extremely rare in Philadelphia, while educating a student body that is primarily black and brown, with 25% of the students requiring special ed classes. Jameer Lowe Smith, president of the school's chapter of Junior MANNRS, Minorities in Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Related Sciences, which preps students for jobs in the growing green industries, explains that you just can't replicate what this school has built anywhere else. Lankenau takes education to the next level. Admittedly, the school is only about half full, but recommendations for closing it need to be more than about numbers, says Democratic State Representative Tara Kahn. Lankenau is firing all cylinders. The school has created so many opportunities for students, so many connections. To take this school out of its environment would break a lot of those opportunities. Jessica Matamini, Lankenau's principal for the last 5 years, stressed that agriculture is Pennsylvania's number one industry, and Lankenau is preparing kids to fill those jobs. One family spokesperson explained, "The reason we put our daughter in Lankenau is because of the available opportunities and the natural surroundings. We're not surrounded by any nature at home, and her being allowed to attend a school like this is a really big deal. Lankanaw's Chad Early had to work through tears after hearing about the proposed closure, but then she marveled at how students had already pivoted to problem solving, resolving to write letters and speak at meetings. "My motto, respectfully, is hell no, we won't go," said Early. "We're secluded and we're safe. You never know what hardships these kids are going through outside of school. Imagine what this loss would do to them."
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. In just a little bit, we will go into a detailed examination of mushroom soil. What is it? How many kinds are there? And does it belong in your garden beds? But before that, another phone call or two at 610-694-8100. Christy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, hi there. How are you?
I am sitting up and taking nourishment, Christy. Other than that, I'm not going to be held to anything. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's getting a little warmer here today. I'm in South Georgia, and we're not used to cold weather. So.
Oh, I have been watching the news, and you people have been pummeled. I mean, it's like that movie, the day after tomorrow, or, you know, it went below freezing in Miami. I have an old friend who moved down there making sure he was below the frost zone so he could grow things like birds of paradise and tomatoes outdoors all year round. And poor Jim got a shock.
Yeah, I understand that their little, what are they, the little iguanas or whatever they have in South Florida, that they've been just dropping over waiting for it to warm up.
Right, they're cold-blooded reptiles, and yes. They're big. So if one of them loses its grip and drops on your head, it'll break your shoelaces. All right, so what can we do for Christy in Southern Georgia?
Well, I am attempting to learn a little bit. I am completely clueless. Maybe your most clueless caller you've ever had.
No.
basically trying to figure out the best way to grow an organic raised bed. I don't have any experience growing anything organic, and not much more than that growing anything else. I did marry into a family that farmed, but not organically. So this is all new to me.
Have you had a garden at your place before?
We have, yes.
And it's just been a flat earth garden?
Yes.
Okay. Well, my first advice for these things is always to start out small. Don't try to build like 8 raised beds between now and the springtime. Hopefully you will get a spring and you'll get it before me and things will get back to normal again.
Right.
Wouldn't that be nice, huh?
Yes, it would.
The land you've been growing on, you've been using chemical fertilizer and pesticides.
No, there's nothing been grown here in quite some time. They had a blueberry farm last.
Oh.
But that's probably 10 years ago, whenever they basically took all those up. And so there hasn't been anything since then.
I thought you said you had a garden.
We did. We had one during that time period.
Oh, okay.
So we have since then, yeah.
Here's my basic advice. First, you want to choose your framing options. And your options have gotten so much broader over the years. This is ridiculously easy. One of the easiest choices is cedar, untreated cedar wood. And you can buy that in kits where the lumber is already pre-measured out to be 8 foot and 4 foot. And you can get corner posts to anchor it in. So you're really not doing any building. And then you pick your spot. How intensely hot does it get in midsummer there?
Not uncommon for it to be 90s to 100 when you're talking summer.
Okay. Well, you know, that's not Arizona.
No.
So do you have a good site selected that gets ideally southeastern exposure?
Yes, we do, actually.
And is there any shade involved?
There's some pine trees to the left and to the right, but it's a fairly large opening, so it's probably about a half an acre.
Okay. And can you make some of the beds so that they're shaded in the afternoon by the pine trees?
We could, yes.
Because in your summers, the plants often need a cooling off in the heat of the day. Before you drop your raised bed frames, you want to get a lawnmower and you want to scalp the area. Keep going until you see dirt blowing out the back of the mower.
Well, that's already done. Wait, it is cleared to the ground.
Okay, very good. So what I recommend now is you go to like your local Home Depot or Lowe's and bum some cardboard, the really heavy cardboard like they have for refrigerators and stuff.
Okay.
And you want to put a single layer of cardboard down on the ground and you want it to overlap the edges of the raised bed frame. So there'll be a little bit of cardboard sticking out on all sides. Now, what are we going to fill it with? What do you have access to? Do you have any big nurseries that sell compost or anything like that?
You know, whenever we talk, I guess, on the organic side, I'm not sure what we have.
Then I want you to go online and find the Composting Council. They're a national organization. And they will help you find the nearest purveyor of bulk compost. And what I recommend for people starting out is like 40% compost, 40% screened topsoil. That means it's been run through screens so the particles are fine, 20% perlite, which is a material you buy in bags the bags are huge. The bags are 4 feet high and weigh a couple of pounds. And that's the best soil lightener. You mix those all together. But before you do that, I always recommend that if people are buying compost and screened topsoil for the first time, they go to the place where they're going to buy it from and take along a couple of 5-gallon buckets. Then when you get home, fill 4 flower pots or 2 flower pots each with compost and screened topsoil And in one, you don't plant anything. In the other one, you plant whatever seeds you have a lot of. Although pea and bean seeds are the best because they're big and they're very sensitive to herbicides. So you plant those seeds, you water all four containers, and if nothing comes up in the theoretically empty containers, there's no weed seeds in there. That means it's been cooked down well. And if the plants that come up in the planted containers look nice and green and healthy, then you can be assured that there aren't a lot of herbicide residues in there.
Okay.
But order more than you need. It sounds like you got a good amount of land. Let the rest of it sit out in piles, and it'll continue to cook down. And in your heat, that'll get rid of any remaining weed seeds.
Okay.
And then, you know, once you're done planting and you have everything installed, your, quote, pine trees, they give off those longleaf pines, right? They give off those long runs of needles.
Yeah.
That is the perfect mulch for down south. Just start collecting it and keep it and use that to mulch your beds. It's nice and light, so it doesn't compact the soil surface. And it's good for keeping down weeds, lets the soil breathe. And it's free, and it's local.
Yes, it's perfect.
So just remember that the beds are going to be 4x8, or if you want a little bed for something special, 4x4, because you're never going to step in the beds. You want to make sure you can reach the center from either side. Compressed soil. People walking around their plants all the time is one of the biggest human causes of plant death. So is that enough to get you in trouble?
Oh, I think so. I appreciate that a bunch. And I did listen to some of the shows that you, I come by your name from Randy Shane. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but I went on and listened to some of your shows and the watering, and I understand you can overwater as well. So with it as hot as it is, what I got from you was water in the morning time, but not too much.
No. You can, if it's going to be really hot, you can water heavily in the morning for several hours using a drip line. If you have an old hose around, poke a lot of holes in it. You don't want to water the leaves of your plants, especially in a humid environment. But you want to really soak them. Typically, once a week is all you'll need with that good pine straw mulch. But if it's really torrid and the plants are really kind of showing stress in the afternoon, you can up that to twice a week. I think that's enough to get you in trouble. And then you can call us back and we'll help you out some more.
Okay, I think so. Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking my call.
Oh, I appreciate you making it. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and pass along a warning from one of our Facebook friends. Do not buy potting soil that contains, quote, water-holding crystals when you stock up this spring, unless you want more microplastics in your life. But don't go changing your planting plans just yet, because we'll be right back with the good and the bad of mushroom soil and more of your good and bad phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
Do you have vinyl albums, 45s, or CDs on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the donation, and you can claim a tax deduction. For more information, or to arrange for a drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 or visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later, what is mushroom soil? We'll tell you about all the variations thereof after another of your fabulous phone calls. Number to call, 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Michelle, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Michelle. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
And where is Michelle doing great?
I'm outside of Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay.
And the last time I spoke with you, I was talking about my Great Pyrenees that was digging up the yard.
Oh, you sent me some pictures recently.
Yes, it's not the same Great Pyrenees, but Spencer is a therapy dog now at the hospital. And he digs, but he only digs in a different space now. So,
all right, so I guess he's not the problem right now.
No, sadly. I'm glad he doesn't have any problems. He's a healthy, happy dog.
All right, what you got?
I have oleanders that go along pretty much the entire side of my house, and they're as green and happy as they can be, but they rarely bloom. I might get one or two blooms, and I've been here 5 years, and I don't know what to do.
Well, as
I've tried organic fertilizer, and I've read that you don't really need to fertilize them, but they don't do anything. I mean, they're not unhealthy, but I'd like them pretty.
We'll get back to that in a second.
Okay.
But first, you know, we are obligated to point out that oleander is one of the most toxic plants you can have in the landscape. So, and we can't stress this enough. You can't safely eat any part of the plant. You can have a severe allergic reaction to touching the plant.
I did. Yeah. When we first moved here, I had to go to the doctor for the allergic reaction. And I don't really touch them. I don't really do much with them.
Doesn't take much. You can see how oily they are, for lack of a better word. And it doesn't take much. And then the other warning is that they are extremely flammable.
Yeah,
they go up like a torch.
Wow.
So they're,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're not supposed to be planted in areas where there's a chance of wildfires.
Oh, wow.
And the smoke is very toxic. If you ever cut
them, I would imagine.
Yeah, if you ever, you know, it's a chore to cut them down because you got to protect yourself.
On the other half of my house, I have the entire front of the house are gardenias.
Okay.
Which do well. They bloom. They look great. But these things never do anything.
How much sun do they get?
They get early morning sun and probably about 3 o'clock, not sun after that.
Mm-hmm. How long have they been in the ground?
I don't know. I mean, we've been here 5 years, and they were maybe when they got planted, when the home was built, maybe 20 years ago.
And you've never seen flowers?
Occasionally.
What
you'll
color?
You'll see one or two. I think a reddish pink.
Yes. Yeah. They come in a lot of different colors. And by the way, I should also mention that they're deer proof and can practically grow in salt water.
True.
So
deer do not touch them, but they will eat the gardenias, and they don't eat palm trees, and they don't eat the sago palms.
But would you?
No, I wouldn't either. No, but I don't have a lot of color in my yard except for the gardenias in the spring.
Right. So you want
to
get
nice
some
have
color
something
here
in the summer?
Tell me
maybe it's a lost cause.
I'm the only lost cause around here. Tell me about the place they're planted. Describe the area.
Well, we live in a sort of a sandy condition next to a creek that runs into one of the rivers here in Charleston. They're surrounded by pine trees and palm trees, and that's about it.
Well, and what kind of organic fertilizer did you use?
Oh, shoot. Is it an E?
Oh, it's SPOMA.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they used to support the show.
Yeah. Well, they still should.
Yeah, I know. And do you remember what specific product you bought?
Not off the top of my head. I thought it said it was just a general organic fertilizer for plants and vegetables, maybe.
Okay.
What do you call it? Soil is just the middle of the pH scale. What do you call that? It's neither acidic nor alkaline.
Yeah, it's neutral.
Thank you, neutral.
So, two things. They're growing in sand, but they don't get saline water. It's fresh water.
Yes, they get, they're on an irrigation line.
Okay, not the intercoastal.
No. Mm-mm.
So here's two things.
Okay.
I would improve the soil with compost to improve the water retention and to give the plants a nice natural feeding. How long is this row?
I was looking at it probably 30 feet.
Okay. I do think it's getting too much shade. You know, that's the number one cause of reduced blooms. Take a good look at the area and see if there's any big plants casting shade that you might be able to remove. For instance, go out and just stare at this stuff over the course of a season and note the one plant probably that's responsible for a lot of coverage.
Okay.
Otherwise, how are you fixed for compost? What do you use it? Do you know about it?
Sure. I can go and look for some. I can ask the, I'm past the grass cutting stage in my life, but I can ask the guy that does the grass to bring some in, and he could do it.
I don't know. I wouldn't trust what they would bring in.
Okay.
No, you don't want sludge, which is reclaimed human waste. You don't want anything like that. You want really high quality, organically approved compost.
Okay.
We've had a guy on the show many times, and I'm trying to remember the exact name of the organization, but I believe it's the Composting Council. And their webpage directs you to places that sell premium compost, because you're going to need at least a baby dump truck.
Yes.
So what I would do is buy an organic fertilizer with a very low first number, nitrogen.
Okay.
A good naturally high middle number, like a 7.
Okay.
And then, say, a 5 for the phosphorus.
Mm-hmm.
Or potassium, I'm sorry. But NPK, you want low, high, and medium. But nothing approaching 10. As soon as you get to 10, that would mean it's a chemical fertilizer, or it's a natural fertilizer that contains a ton of very active nitrogen. See, you want low nitrogen. You might even be able, we did stories in this organic gardening back when I was chasing off raptors with a slingshot. And there are specific single elements that you can add to your soil that might be useful. And that's easy enough for you to look up. So what I want you to do is get that fertilizer in hand, spread it around the trees, not at the very base, but like 6 inches out, and then cover that with compost. Granular fertilizers don't activate without help. and covering it with compost will get it rocking and rolling.
Okay. So what's funny, on the other side of the house, which does not get any very little sun, I have blooming oleanders on that side. So I don't understand.
You're making me look bad here.
No, I'm just wondering. I wonder if I just have, you know, oleanders that just don't like the house or something. Maybe I should put gardenias
well,
in or something.
Okay. You know, the sun rises in the east, sets
that's,
in the west. North is pointed towards May. South is pointed towards Georgia.
Okay.
What kind of sun does the working or
western sun?
Okay. You're killing me here. You're absolutely killing me.
Well, you said it needed more sun. Maybe that's why they're happy over there. It's just two plants. They're not very
big. Okay. And there's nothing. They get sun all day.
They probably get a lot of afternoon sun.
Yeah. Also, in addition to this, I think you got to talk to an arborist about maybe doing some limbing, doing some thinning, at least get a professional estimate.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
This is helpful. I will do this.
Oh,
and I hope you feel better soon. I'm sorry you're sick.
And you. I can't wait for spring.
Try some hot tea.
I'm drinking hot tea. And I can't wait for spring.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for your help.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You take care.
It's nice talking to you. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. And now, time for something a little different. News from Mount Vernon, George Washington's Virginia estate. I get emails from these people every week, and either the timing is off or it's not garden enough centered. Now, I have an ongoing question with them because at one point they talked it being a working farm, but I haven't got a straight answer about that yet. I will continue to pursue that querulous question, but now I want to talk about something coming up that may interest listeners in the greater Virginia area or people who might like to take a trip to Mount Vernon and similar historical sites in the spring. And I read from their press release. We are thrilled to be part of the new Virginia 250 Passport. This collaborative statewide initiative encourages Virginians and visitors to commemorate America's 250th birthday by engaging with the Commonwealth's foremost historic sites and museums. The Virginia 250 Passport serves as a travel guide, a discount book, and a keepsake. The 64-page commemorative booklet features descriptions of the 70 participating museums and historic sites across five regions of the Commonwealth. It all began late last year, and passports are now available free of charge at signature sites like Mount Vernon, at the VA 250 Mobile Museum, select VA 250 events, and all 12 Virginia Welcome Centers. Travelers can collect unique stamps while visiting each passport site. Once they have secured a stamp in their passport, they can receive up to a 15% discount at future participating locations that charge admission. Collecting at least five stamps makes you eligible to enter the prize drawing. Prizes will be drawn in December 2026 and include year-long museum memberships and cash awards up to $2,500. Quote, George Washington's Mount Vernon is honored to stand alongside Virginia's premier historic destinations to commemorate America's 250th, said Doug Bradburn, president and CEO of George Washington's Mount Vernon. This passport program invites visitors to walk in the footsteps of our founders, explore the places where our nation took shape, and reflect on the enduring legacy of the American Revolution. We hope every Virginian takes this opportunity to experience history firsthand and be inspired by the vision of those who built their country. The Virginia 250 Passport Program runs through December 31st, and more information, including those all-important sweepstakes rules, is available at virginiahistory.org/250passport. But I bet if you just go to virginiahistory.org, you'll find it right there. And if you take advantage of this opportunity, tell me if they have a working farm in the summer or not. I know for a fact they have lush grounds that are inspired by Washington's favorite plantings. So, good luck to Virginia in 250, and I'll simply say that I grew up in the real 250 of Philadelphia. I'm historic. Something I realize more and more every day. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody out there to make sure to choose varieties for your garden that are specifically designated as being suited to your USDA growing zone. Or you could wind up trying to grow a Zone 8 plant in a Zone 4 snowdrift. But don't go making that list and checking it twice just yet, because we'll be right back with a truckload of mushroom soil and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. Are you still using an old-school outdoor bug zapper? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll explain why you should unplug that useless thing for good. Plus, pretty, pretty poppies and your fabulous phone calls. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later, it is a problem that has confounded gardeners, organic and conventional, for many, many years. You're told to use, quote, mushroom soil in your garden. But exactly what is mushroom soil? Because it ain't just one single thing. We'll tell you about all the variations thereof after another of your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Alex, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Alex. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
I'm just ducky. Thanks for asking. And where is great. Alex good?
I am in Norman, Oklahoma.
Right outside of Oklahoma City. I know it well.
That's correct.
All right. What can we do you for, sir?
I have a few questions about fireflies. How do people attract fireflies and their larvae, their glowworms, in the soil? from what I understand, their larvae eats slugs.
Correct.
And snails.
Yes.
But unfortunately, they eat earthworms. And I understand that earthworms are very important to health.
I don't think that that's true. And even if it is partially true, slugs and earthworms exist in different environments.
Oh, they do. Okay.
And frankly, lightning bugs are worth it just to have lightning bugs around in the summer. It shows right. that the world is still alive somehow.
Yes.
So the life cycle of the lightning bug or firefly is when you see them flashing in the summer, they're attracting mates.
Yes.
And the female then lays eggs in the soil. And mm-hmm. in some species, even the eggs have a glow to them, which is wild. They lay their eggs in a very particular environment, which is in wet, grassy areas. So if you want to encourage them, you may actually have to cultivate something artificially to get the right kind of habitat for them.
How does that happen?
Well, you would pick an area. You would, you know, empty it out a little bit, dig down an inch or two, plant some grass seed, and make a small patch somewhere that is not in direct sun. And just don't use any chemicals near it. The number one thing we need to do to protect lightning bugs is to not use any kind of chemicals. They're very sensitive. But as you note, the eggs hatch into glowworms, which are real creatures. They're really fascinating. So what they would need is a grassy area that you don't cut lower than, say, 4 inches, and you make sure it stays moist, especially after, I would say, mating time. After you stop seeing them, that's a good time to have this area prepared and growing, and then keep it watered until the weather changes. Because when the female is looking to lay her eggs, she's going to be looking for wet, grassy areas, because that's where the glowworms will find their prey of slugs and snails, which are ground-based creatures, whereby earthworms, I mean, you don't see earthworms until you go digging for them, or unless we get a crazy heavy rain. So the glowworms aren't burrowing creatures. You know, they're not going to harm the earthworms because they're not going to interact with them. They live on different blocks.
Oh, wow. Okay. What are the benefits and the disadvantages of having fireflies in your garden or near your garden?
Oh, there's no disadvantage. The advantage is, as you say, with a lot of insects that go through what's called a true metamorphosis, whereby the larva doesn't look anything like the adult. It's generally the larval stage that does all the eating. So it's those glowworms that are feasting on slugs and snails and other soft-bodied creatures that are on the surface of the earth, because especially in your environment, they're all attracted by moisture. So this patch kind of becomes a trap for soft-bodied insects.
Yes. So when they're in the larval state, they're just fattening up.
Yeah.
And for the rest of their lives, when they hatch into fireflies, their job is just to mate.
Unfortunately, just like a lot of other flying creatures, they don't live long as adults. You know, they use all this energy they ate while they were young to make the metamorphosis. You know, they hatch in sequence, which is why we see them for a while in the summertime. But I don't think the life cycle as an adult is more than 10 days.
Oh, that's sad.
Well, you know, we look forward to it. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we get a lot of it in summer. And then if we have this cultivated area that we're caring for, we have hope that they'll come back.
So their peak time to watch them is during the summer.
Yeah. You can find out exactly from the Oklahoma State Extension when the adult emergence time is. Although it will tend to be around an unusual rainy period at the end of the spring and early summer. They're not going to transmogrify during a dry period.
Okay. How rare are they? I mean, I know they're not endangered, but
they're found everywhere in every corner of the world except Antarctica, but their numbers are declining. So every species we cultivate by having these natural wet grassy areas and not using pesticides, that helps keep their numbers up.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I'll pass it on.
All right. My pleasure, and enjoy your lightning bugs this summer.
Okay. Thanks.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
As promised, it is time for the question of the week, which we're calling the many faces of mushroom soil. A couple of shows ago, our question of the week concerned what kind of, quote, soil you should fill your raised beds with. Note, you can listen to that show at the WDIY website or the podcast of your choice. Anyway, we discussed compost, screened topsoil, perlite, how to test bulk material before you buy, and lots more. But our questioner, Bernadette in Allentown, also asked about mushroom soil, to which we replied there are at least four different kinds of, quote, mushroom soil: fresh and aged in regular form, and fresh and aged in organic form. The differences are important and would take another question of the week to fully explain, which we are here to do today, beginning with a new question. Diane in Mount Juliet, just outside of Nashville, writes, I have raised beds built to your specifications. They're several years old and the soil is getting compacted. And no, I don't step in them. And they need to be topped off. My nursery carries mushroom compost as well as, quote, raised bed soil. Their blend of, quote, organic soil, composed of topsoil, compost, soil conditioner, and sand. I was thinking of using half and half, but I don't know anything about mushroom compost. Your thoughts? Before we begin, I must remind our merry Mouseketeers that there is no such thing as, quote, organic soil available for purchase. Your nursery's so-called organic blend contains topsoil, which is not organic unless it was collected off of a certified organic farm or my garden, quote, compost, which can be certified organic, but such stuff is hard to find, sand, presumably for drainage, but what kind of sand? There are several different types, and they all have different uses, and their mysterious, quote, soil conditioner, whatever that may be. Anyway, mushroom soil, aka mushroom compost, spent mushroom soil, mushroom substrate, etc., can be a very rewarding compost alternative, but you have to know exactly what you're getting. Regular mushroom soil is a blend of ingredients like fresh horse manure, including the bedding, poultry manure, ground up corn cobs, gypsum, and other locally available ingredients. It goes into the mushroom growing houses fresh, as in still steaming hot, in trays that are inoculated with spores of the desired mushroom variety. These trays are kept in a dark, humid environment until their mushrooms are the correct size for harvest, and then the growing medium is reused once or twice, after which it is replaced by new material. Although the replaced material is sometimes called spent, its nutrients are only spent growing fungi and it has lots of plant growing potential left. Fresh mushroom soil is just like it sounds. Fresh out of the mushroom house, steaming, stinky, and hot as Hades. Fresh mushroom soil is widely available, but it is not ready for use. Farmers and gardeners with space for storage will often order a truckload. Now, it's a real truck, typically holding around 16 tons, and allow it to compost down for a season. It is theoretically ready for use when the pile has greatly reduced in size, is no longer hot to the touch, and doesn't stink anymore. But any bulk material should be tested before you use it. Although fresh mushroom soil is typically steamed to kill weed seeds, it could still be full of herbicides, even after composting down. So use the two-container test we described in the Fill Your Beds article referred to earlier. If the new sprouts that emerge in a planted pot full of the soil look awful, it means herbicide levels could be high enough to kill your plants. Aged mushroom soil is just like the above, but it has been aged for you, hopefully in windrows where the material is turned constantly, which can help reduce those herbicide residues. It will come in a smaller delivery vehicle and should have little to no smell or heat. You should still test this material for weeds and herbicide residue before delivery or before you buy a load to cart home in your pickup truck. Whether it was professionally aged or you aged it yourself, don't use mushroom soil to start your seeds or apply it around plants that are less than 6 weeks old. Bonus, a high-quality supplier of bulk compost and or mushroom soil should be able to supply you with a professional analysis of the material. Ask for the paper. Pay special attention to the pH so that you can adjust the acidity or alkalinity if necessary. If the results show that it's high in salt from the horse manure, rinse it in small batches before use and use the leftover, quote, mushroom compost tea to feed salt-resistant plants. You'll find lots of lists of such plants online, but stick to reputable sources and not, I tried this and it worked. Organic mushroom soil. While large commercial mushroom operations tend to be isolated in a couple of places across the country, most notably Pennsylvania, small organic mushroom growers can be located anywhere. So do a search and maybe you'll get lucky. Organic mushroom soil is the best. And finally, for more information on any kind of purchase compost and/or mushroom soil, check out the website of the U.S. Composting Council, especially their STA program, that Seal of Testing Assurance. This program includes compost technical data sheets showing test results, a list of ingredients, and recommended directions for use. Well, that was hopefully some helpful advice about mushroom soil and other bulk garden amendments. Now, wasn't it? Yikes, my producer is threatening to fill my beds with fresh mushroom soil if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100 and follow the prompts or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse teeming. To our garden shore at our new email site, youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. No matter how you contact us, please, please include your location. You'll find our new phone number, our new Gmail address, a link to the ever-growing Gardens Alive archive of previous answers, and new and improved links to our podcast sites. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the studios of NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when his father couldn't remember if it was red jumper cable to the battery terminal, to a metal car part, or to Mike's head. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziproth. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome Ninja Sean. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'll be feverishly catching up on my seat starting until I can see you again next week.